this one the right time is basically key. But go on to 19:18.
Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul despair for his crimes.
There's clearly a window of opportunity that needs to be made sure that teaching occurs within. When that obviously is not an objective, and the first, the ages is 12 to 16 is the right window. It's while there's hope, when your children are moldable in the learning environment where they're open, where you have that relationship to teach your children, well, there's that hope that you can steer them and mold them in the right direction. The same with other audiences, not just children as well. Kind of shifting gears over to 29:15.
Rod of reproof gives wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother.
This kind of reiterates that same concept of teaching children at the right time, consistently teaching children. Some of the other versions I read basically don't leave the children to themselves compared to having their own way. Most of us here probably have first-hand experience of when we were children and left our own ends and kind of where that can lead pretty easily. I probably shouldn't share any of the stories I had when I was 5 or 6 years old and managed to get out of the backyard and left my own devices for too long and luckily didn't die or fall in a river or drowned or anything crazy like that. If we can look over to the audience of who who we should teach and who we should avoid teaching, obviously we've already talked about children as being a key audience. And one of the main points of Proverbs is teaching Solomon's sons and daughters, his children, on the way of the wise and giving them knowledge to be successful at life. If we'll read chapter 9, verses 7 through 9.
Before we go on, that last one, sir. The New American Standard interprets that a little differently. It says, a child who gets his own way brings... see that some... modern child record, you let the child, you don't want to constrain them, you let them do their own thing. And as many times you see, particularly small children, the mother just let them do what they want to do, keep them happy, and it doesn't work out very well. Just what Proverbs tells us, warns us of that.
It's very, definitely, very clear children don't know how to raise themselves to be successful adults, and it's definitely a trend in our society on letting that too much freedom appear to be the right answer. Thank you. Chapter 9, 7 through 9.
Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you, but reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning.
So that covers several audiences that it's not not prudent to try and instruct, not prudent to, not worthwhile of your time to try and teach them, as well as the audience of who's going to be receptive and kind of the results of wasting your time on trying to teach someone that's foolish or a scoffer. And basically beating your head against a brick wall in best case on any of those. Reiterates it again, 15:12 and several other verses. Basically you'll get injury or scoffed at or beaten or injured or just completely waste your time trying to teach people that aren't receptive or looking to gain knowledge. Look at 22:6. The inference there is really been reiterated a couple other places. Starting up when they're early is why I included this verse. I mean, I don't think there's a too early time to start training your children up in the ways of the Lord. When they're old enough to, basically when their ears have developed, they're starting to take in information. And it's amazing at how young kids can pick up songs and start singing Bible verses, and what they pick up at such an early age. So I don't think there's a too early point to start that knowledge. If we look at some of the ways that are mentioned in Proverbs and how we can teach, there's several, and if we can start out with the example on chapter 23, verse 26.
23:26.
Yes, please.
My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes keep to my ways.
And that's it, yep. Right there, black and white, watch what I'm doing. That's how you'll learn. Pretty clear. As a teacher, you're the example, and people are going to watch you, whether you told them to watch you, and here's how I'm demonstrating how to do something, or you're going about your normal life and may not be in the teaching mode. People are still watching you and observing and learning from you, whether you think you are instructing at that point or not. We'll go over to chapter 15, verse 7.
The lips of the wise spread knowledge, not so the hearts of fools.
And then 16:23.
The heart of the wise teaches his mouth, and has learning to the
lips. So both of these are addressing basic speaking, either one-on-one or group audience, and the result of speaking. One of the methods you can transmit is speaking. We've got PowerPoints that obviously didn't exist at this time period, and several other tools to aid in speaking that we can use now. But the audio method of learning has definitely been a primary means for a long, long time. If we look at chapter 9, verse 8, I lost track of her. Thank you.
Do not rebuke a mocker. He will hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you.
And I think we've touched on 13:24 as well as 22:15, both of those inferencing either rebuking more the negative aspect of training, where there's that harsh isn't quite the word, but the discipline aspect of confronting wrong, punishing wrong, as being part of a training, where if you're approaching someone and not being scared to take that harder line with your kids and hold them to the standard, rebuke them when they're wrong, and correct them and punish them so that they learn and have the motivation before they have it internalized to do the right thing. Rebuking a wise man, obviously that can be more difficult than easy, because you don't know how they're going to respond. Whether you're rebuking someone that's going to respond wisely or just flare up and become defensive and not listen to what you're saying. Both of those things are more towards the negative confrontational end, but are definitely need to be done to be effective in teaching and inspiring more knowledge. If we'll look at 19:18 and 29:20, both of those kind of look at the manner and aspect of how you would be doing those.
19:18 says, discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death. 29:20 says, seek thou a man that is hasty in his words. There is more hope of a fool than of him.
So both of those kind of address the manner, the attitude on how you may rebuke someone, and how you may chastise and punish your children, kind of attitude you should have, which personal experience it can be frustrating. Trying to not be frustrated, not necessarily set on destruction of your children, but not be frustrated in that that short time frame when you're trying to correct your kids and teach them to do the right thing, and they've done the same thing 57 times in a row and don't seem to be responding to your correction. So I think that's a good warning on how to handle that punishment, and then not hasty with your words as you're rebuking someone. Think through what you're going to say. Coming up to someone and just starting barking at them is probably not a good way to rebuke them. They're probably not going to respond well. If you're slow, have well thought out words, and are going to have some points and listen to them as they respond too, you're probably going to be a lot more successful as you rebuke them and try to encourage them to change their ways. and learn the error of their ways. If we look at chapter 22, verse 20.
Have I not written to you excellent things of counsel and knowledge?
And if we look at the beginning of Proverbs, the first seven verses really talk about why Solomon wrote his section of Proverbs. But both of these, we've got this whole book of Proverbs, as well as the whole Bible, written down so that we can read and learn its instruction. I don't think, on a daily basis, I know I don't write a whole lot of stuff down to my siblings or my kids or anyone else in general to teach them. But almost every educational institution, there's a ton of books you're going to be reading. There's a lot of written instruction that people will learn. And we've got within the church, we've got the Bible, there's commentaries, there's a lot of written resources to learn from both man's perspective, earthly knowledge, as well as the salvation for our souls through the Bible. We're going through this quite a bit faster than I anticipated.
I think on the written instruction, too, it's an opportunity to think about the relationship that you have with your children. One of the things you can do is write a letter to your child, not that they would read it right then, but that as you're thinking about them and you're training them and you're preparing them for life, there's certain thoughts you have from time to time on them and concerns about them and for them. And it's good to articulate that in the letter. And again, they may not be old enough to even read it, but something that's kept for maybe later use as they grow up and even begin that journey of their own in life. That would be something useful for them.
That's excellent, yeah.
You talk about the audience, that the books are actually all this advice I give to a son or daughter, there's a relationship in them. It's the same as rules with our relationship used to rebellion. So you got to set a relationship first. You got to show affection, you got to show I care about you, and then impose those rules and correction, because otherwise it leads to rebellion. I mean, every child, every other person will rebel to just simple correction without the affectionate father betraying.
Definitely. Backing up just a little bit on that. Talking about rebuking the wise. I mean, if you look at the example of David, when he was confronted with his sin, you know, the prophet didn't come in and say, you know, just start rebuking him. He said, here's a principle. This is a principle. And as soon as the audience, as soon as David bought into the principle that he was teaching, he said, this applies to you. And that's a lot of times how we have to couch wisdom. We have to first, you know, teach the principle and then show how it applies to that individual. You know, and that's an easy way, because once you get them to buy into the understanding that here's a moral lesson or something, you know, as soon as they understand that, as soon as they buy into that, then it's a little bit easier to accept it.
That's an excellent example. Thank you. Still?
I think the other point from Proverbs, Solomon, that presents wisdom as a woman, but as a, in the sense of personifying wisdom. But what you get from that is wisdom is objective. He's not talking about, because of my subjective experience, I think this is the best way for you to live your life. The point of Proverbs, when he's speaking of wisdom, is wisdom is linked with truth. And so when you're instructing someone, you're instructing your children, or instructing a wise person, that what he's telling his son is you're instructing them based on truth. You're not merely giving them your own opinion about things or your own sense of things, but you're giving them your judgment rooted in truth and rooted in wisdom, meaning that your knowledge has been instructed by that truth and has applied that truth. And when you veer away from that and you're arbitrary or subjective in what you instruct your children or the commands you give them, that's when you encourage rebellion against that, because then your instruction has no foundation other than your own assertion, your own
arbitrary
authority over them. Right.
Thank you. Well, we'll go on over to methods of learning. There'll be a lot of overlap from the methods of teaching, obviously. All the methods that can be used to teach are the same methods you can use to learn. But a couple of other aspects I'd like to touch as we go through this section. Let's start with chapter 13, verse 13.
Whoever despises the word brings destruction on himself, but he who reveres the commandment will be rewarded.
Really thinking something is so outdated, the Old Testament, we can't take anything from it. It's the first thing that came to mind, that there's so much knowledge there and so many things that you can still apply that aren't just specific laws to the Old Testament, to the Israelites, but are knowledge you can apply and use today. I mean, Proverbs is a wealth of that, just looking at what we're talking about today and some of the previous lessons we've had, and I'm sure the lessons we'll have in the future. Not thinking something's too old or not going to be applicable, you can't learn anything from that, I think it's pretty clearly given right here. If we look at, mentioned one example already that was brought up with Solomon and his sin with Bathsheba. We'll look at a couple others here. Chapter 6, verse 6 through 11. We can look at those verses. I'm not sure where we're at again.
Good to the ants and slaughter to consider his ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in the summer and gathers her food at harvest. How long will you lie there, O slaughter? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber. The children of the hands to rest. Poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man.
There's kind of a double example there. Both the sluggard is told to look at the example of the ant, and the sluggard is included as an example of the results of being a sluggard for the audience reading this book. Both of those pretty clear lessons on the results of the actions you're observing through that example. If we can look at chapter 24, 30, and 32, there's another good example mentioned and some lessons from there. I think we're back up to the front again.
I passed by the field of the sluggard, and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and the stone walls were broken down. When I saw, I reflected upon it, and I looked at the construction.
Another example of a sluggard or laziness and the results of that, but also included is kind of the process of how Solomon saw and observed. He was out walking by, saw a situation, saw something that wasn't the ideal, and studied it, thought about it, took some lessons from it. That process that he's sharing with the audience here is really something that's easy to think of conceptually, but harder to execute with the speed of life now and how much most of us have going on. Taking a moment to see a situation, really analyze it, think about what we can take from it, what could teach our children or learn from it ourselves based off of that example that are just included in everyday life. Yes, sir?
And this was their version of PowerPoint. this is how they illustrated the point. And we can do the same thing. The law of the harvest doesn't change. You know, you can't plant a seed one day and expect it to grow the next day, you know, like cramming for a test. You know, this lesson can be applied not only just to, you know, looking at a sluggard and you can tell a man's disposition based upon looking at his work. You know, that's one lesson here, but there's so many lessons that, you know, that you can teach from these examples. Same way with the ant. I mean, you can teach all kinds of lessons from that. So,
think those two examples together are good, because if you think about a vineyard, I mean, someone that owns a vineyard has the potential of, you know, really having a great thing. And yet here's an owner of a vineyard who's lazy, who just allows it to go to ruin, and you compare that to an ant, which is, you know, in our minds probably nothing. And yet the ant, because the ant is industrious and always busy, and no one overseeing what the ant's doing, you know, I think those two examples are good, showing that, you know, we have to be industrious and make the most of what we have. So I like those two.
Exactly. Both of them focus on the right way and the consequence of taking the wrong path.
I noticed when I was in West Virginia in July, it bothered me, because my father always, you know, he grew up the old way where you clean the fields, you clean everything up. And you look at the country now, and nobody's doing that anymore, so everything's just growing up. Because to me, that's people have gotten lazy. They don't want to put that much effort. So you just look at how fields and stuff are growing up, and yet my brothers say, well, you can't even find anybody to just clean the farm that we have now. They're too lazy. They don't want to be bothered. And yet there's all kinds of people not working. So, and it's like that. I've been all over the United States, really. It's like we've gotten lazy, you know.
General society doesn't seem to be focusing as much on some of the lessons we're looking at here and the examples of those. I think part of it's a time frame. There's not that safety net of a government help to keep you from starving in general in our country. I think probably some of these lessons where that safety net doesn't exist are a little clearer, where people understand the very realness of working hard and not starving.
When you look at our highways, and then you just look around your neighborhood.
Exactly.
So pretty much, you see the same thing.
Exactly.
Well, when I'm the project managers that work for me, and some of the hardest lessons are, listen, your work is evident by looking at your project. You know, if you're always having to save yourself, you know, take desperate measures to get the project back on track, more than likely you probably didn't put forth. So, you know, what you see when you look at a person's work tells you how they approach it. You know, I have some project managers that have folders and they take the time and they put everything there and it's recorded, and they do their checklist, because the checklists are not just checklists. They're to make sure that you haven't forgot something, you know. And they're never having to bail out their project, whereas you've got other ones. So it applies, doesn't matter who, what kind of job it is, you know, your work is evidence. When you look at it, it'll tell you something about your character and about how you approach industriousness.
Good. Not only a good gauge of others, but of yourself as you look at results and assess how what situations you may put yourself in, either by procrastination or not, putting forth the effort consistently like each of us would want to. Okay. I'll move on to auditory learning. Verse 1:8 just basically says, listen to what I'm saying. Pretty clear. You can read, you can listen, you can see examples. We'll read verse 4:2. Chapter 4, verse 2, and chapter 5, verse 1 as well, both under these sections.
4:2, for I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law.
My son, be attentive to my wisdom, and incline your ear to my understanding.
So both of these are not just about hearing sound in the air, but being attentive to what you're hearing, assessing what you're hearing, paying attention and expending some energy to take in knowledge through that method, and that it's not a passive sitting there and you'll just soak up everything that you're exposed to. It takes some attention, takes some energy, takes some focus, and that warning is included for both in both of those verses. for the audience to pay attention, be attentive, and assess what you're hearing. Another aspect of learning is who you're surrounding yourself with, and how you're the effect of that, whether you are learning also in a passive manner. And there's a warning both on the good and the bad with who you may spend your time with. We'll look at chapter 13, verse 20, and chapter 15, verses 22 through 23.
He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm.
Without counsel, friends go awry, but in the multitude of counselors there is that a man hands forward about the answer of his mouth, the words spoken, he receives and has to read.
So both of those are good scenarios. We're surrounding yourself with wise people. Surrounding yourself with wise counselors are going to increase your odds of being either a wise counselor yourself, increased wisdom for yourself, and making the right choices by balancing those ideas and working with counselors otherwise. There's warnings later on. And what time is the first bell? Make sure I'm track on time. As you get down into the characteristics, there's warnings later on of walking with angry people or spending your time with people that aren't emulating the aspects that you want to have and the results thereof, as well as not seeking out counsel, not seeking out knowledge. So the people you're around, the people you're letting your kids spend time with, the people you're spending time with outside of work or in work, can definitely affect your overall success and what you're going to pick up and emulate yourself.
Expectations of those around you. If you're hanging around with wise people, they're going to expect you to be a little different from hanging out with a bunch of sluggards. Their expectation of you and your expectation of yourself and your expectation of them, it just all changes depending upon what ground you're hanging around. That's part of the lesson in those verses.
I know personally I've noticed people will rise to the expectation if that's the the culture of that group. People tend to fit in and rise to those. If we look at again, we touched on it in the methods of teaching. But if we'll look at being rebuked or chastised, and the rod is mentioned again with children, but if we look at chapters 3, verse 11 through 13, and chapter 13, verse 18. And
13:24. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, you're sleeping and sleep.
I'm sorry, I told you the wrong one. 13:18, sorry. So both of these, from the person being rebuked perspective or being chastised, remembering that in the back of your mind, that you're one of the reasons you may be rebuked is because the Lord loves you and wants you to be successful and wants you to follow Him and be spiritually safe. And if He wasn't loving you and didn't care and didn't want you to be one of His children, you wouldn't receive those corrections. Looking at that, whether you enjoy being punished in the short term or being chastised or being told, hey, you made a bad choice, as hard as that is on your pride to take, knowing that you're receiving that correction because the Lord loves you can make it a lot easier to keep a good attitude and and take a look at yourself and make those changes, vice making a poor choice and just ignoring what the person telling you to change, maybe, and just disregarding it and being frustrated. We're getting close to out of time, so I'll probably try and cover these last few sections, and we're not going to read all of these verses. Thank you all for reading so much of these. A couple things we can look at as we're looking for motivation. We touched on earlier in the first section of why we would want to learn, end result of having wisdom and knowledge. If you are diligently seeking it, diligently studying, you're going to have the fulfillment of that promise where you'll be wise as you pursue that. Not in the near term, but it's a big motivation, knowing that the efforts now will pay off in the long term. Increased trust in the Lord and the fearing the Lord, both of those are benefits that will help you gain wisdom through gaining knowledge as you go through. There's a lot of characteristics of students and teachers that unfortunately we didn't have time to cover today. Most of them are positive characteristics for teachers, and most of the characteristics, let me rephrase that. Most of them are positive characteristics for students, and warnings about who you can get bad lessons from, either the people you're spending your time with, some characteristics such as angry, false, spiteful, lying, kind of the obvious things that you don't want to surround yourself with and learn from, and insulating yourself from those as well as those you're responsible for. The pretty straightforward, no real earth-shattering new knowledge coming out of what to be aware of, but a good refreshment on the knowledge that we have and kind of taking a step back and assessing where we're at right now and making sure we're continuing with the right path. I think we've got about a minute left. If there's any last-minute questions or... All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your attention this morning.